What's the intersection of data mesh and event streaming? Now, these are both topics that are potentially very closely related to real-time analytics, and Hubert Dulay thought they were so related, he wrote a book on the topic. We're going to talk to him today on this episode of the Real-Time Analytics Podcast. Hello and welcome. I am your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined here in the studio today by Hubert Dulay. He's the author of a book called Streaming Data Mesh. Hubert, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Looking forward to this. Very long time. Thanks.
You got it. So data mesh, how did data mesh get your interest? I'd love for you to give us a brief introduction to how you describe data mesh and how did you come into that?
Yeah. This is going to go a few years back. Obviously, Jean-Marc is the trigger of all things data mesh, right? I read her blog. I was very inspired by it. It made a lot of sense and couldn't understand why people weren't doing it at the time, right? But I read it. I was inspired by it. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of people talking about it at the time. And at the time, I was working at Confluent, and I think you were there as well at the time.
I believe so.
And as I was, you know, speaking to customers, I had my first customer ask me what, you know, how we Confluent positions itself in a data mesh. Since, you know, luckily I read the blog and I understood what they were asking and I was able to answer a lot of their questions. But what that led me to do is, you know, start to build more collateral, presentations, enablement internally, to just educate people what it is so that they're prepared to answer those questions. I think, Confluent was a little bit, unprepared to get into the data mesh, conversation. So I kind of initiated that a little bit. But what that got me to do is to, really start thinking about writing a book because a lot of the information out there was still academic. And I guess knew exactly how to implement it with the tools that I knew how and that was familiar with. And that's what I wanted to do is just instead of just answering questions in the forums and, you know, piece by piece, I just wanted to have it be organized as a book. And I'm pretty confident that I did that successfully.
Awesome. Yeah, it's the world of streaming data and event-driven architecture, I think, as we may touch on real-time analytics, like what you and I do in our jobs at StarTree, there seems to be a lot of alignment. Now, I know data mesh is always careful to position itself as not a thing tied to a specific implementation or piece of data infrastructure, but from the first time I got the concept into my head, and it was Jean-Marc's keynote at Kafka Summit that that finally made that happen. Like she was able to describe it and explain it in a really clear way. I thought, oh yeah, no, okay. The kinds of things we're trying to do and kind of the data infrastructure worldview we are commending for belief just seems like it goes with the grain. So,
right. Well, yeah. One of the big reasons that Jean-Marc's data mesh really resonated with me is those 15 years of heads down programming, right? I was a data engineer for a very long time, and I found myself being more and more overwhelmed as the data got bigger and even faster. I became relied upon a lot more, and the team was never really as big enough or scaled out enough to be able to handle all the different use cases, all the data that was coming in, plus maintaining governance, you know, security, etc., meeting SLAs for each use case that the each line of business needed in the company. So I called myself a very monolithic role as a monolithic engineer or monolithic data engineer because everything was seemed to be funneling through the data team, right? And when I read Jean-Marc's proposal for data mesh, it really relieved a lot of the pressure of what that role was. It was a monolithic role, and it was it needed to be kind of, you know, decomposed, decentralized from just the data team, and to have a lot of the domains start to take ownership of the data that they're producing or they're giving to us, and mm-hmm. as well as control some of the like the schemas as well, but live within the mesh itself, right? There's a chapter in the book that talks about how governance can be implemented, right? And I compared it to, say, like a local and a federal government, right? Like where you have your local mm-hmm. governments, you kind of have your rules that way. Those could be your domains. But as you start to integrate or work with other local governments, and there's an overarching umbrella of the federal government, that's really what I felt like a data mesh could be, is to be able to define how domains work with one another, with schemas and security and so on.
Yeah. And federated data governance, I wonder if maybe if you could, before we get into the specifics of your vision for a streaming mm-hmm. data mesh, federated data governance is one of the four pillars, but maybe you just give those to us. Now, I think we're going to have Jean-Marc on the show also, and mm-hmm. we'll link to some stuff of hers in the show notes. If you're new to data mesh, you should read that. But here we are, the two of us. What are the pillars of data mesh?
They are data products. So you have to treat your data as a product. There is your data is owned by the domain, right? So it's no longer owned by a central data team. Domains now own their data, hence they have to create data products for other domains to consume. There's the federated data governance. I'm kind of saying it not in the same order that Jean-Marc would.
Sure.
But in the book, the way I ordered it was domain ownership, or you know, data belonging to the domains. Then I talk about data products, because that kind of goes together.
Yeah.
And then I talk about federated data governance, which is a way to, you know, kind of provide this overarching way of providing governance, not just to local, as I said, local governments, but like overall governance, so that domains can work with one another. But at the end, what I did was put self-services at the end, because that's really what enables everybody to be able to do, take on these responsibilities that they didn't know how to do before. You know what I mean? They needed the tools to be able to do the things that they wanted to do, and use languages that they understood without having to have a whole education of how to, how do I need to code in Python or Scala? I'm a Go programmer building microservices, but how can I build a data product? And that's where like SQL comes in. It's a universal language for data. Most engineers could understand SQL, or at least a little bit of it, and so be able to provide data products that way, but then have them land on a platform that could serve it in real time, which is, you know, yes. some kind of streaming platform.
Yes, which is at some point it's got to get implemented
somewhere.
But I guess I like your ordering of things. I mean, as I see it, the heart and soul of it is when analytics became a thing with big vendors and tools and tool sets, and you know, there's been a migration over the last few decades about what those tools look like.
Right.
But once it became kind of productized, infrastructure teams took ownership of data, because there were there's a data warehouse they had to operate, or an ETL pipeline, and then there was streaming, or there was Hadoop and right. its offspring, and then Kafka. And so the data got pushed up into a team whose job it was to keep the lights on and to keep the pipes from leaking and that kind of thing. Right. And the heart and soul of data mesh, as I see it, is analytics data is a thing that an engineer crafts and presents to others for their use, which is data as a product, right? And it's the person in the domain building the thing, the engineer who has had to learn about that part of the business in order to write software that run that part of the business. They're the ones who should own the data, right? Not the people who are connecting the pipes. Not that there is something somehow wrong with maintaining infrastructure like we like it. Mm-hmm. It had better happen. There's data meshes saying that's just in the wrong place. And so, right.
In my preparation for writing this book, I did read John Muck's book to make sure that following the
sure. It would be a mistake not to.
Exactly. So yeah, it's very respectful to her vision. Her vision was, I think, spot on. All this book doesn't really, talk more about what data mesh is. It's about implementing it as a stream. It's just one way of implementing a data mesh.
Yeah. Talk about that. So again, it's a set of ideas and you want to put them into practice. You want to build systems and you're, let's say, also committed to streaming, which makes you, it's likely for that to describe you if you're listening to something called the Real Time Analytics Podcast. There's probably some kind of system that manages events in your life, would be my guess. So your book, walk us through the heart and soul of data mesh in terms of streaming.
Yeah. I don't want to give too much, but,
Well, no, everybody's going to buy the book. We're going to have a link in the show notes. So the teaser.
Yeah. I have the book in front of me and, I'm going to skim over the table of contents. So
hold the book up. So if you're watching the video, everybody get a good look. This is beautiful cover. Let's,
what I want to do is really, so I take one chapter to introduce, data mesh, and I refer to Jean-Marc's book for more in-depth detail of what data mesh is. And then the second chapter, I go into streaming data mesh and how you would want to think about implementing each pillar of the data mesh as a stream, and what you need to think about when you do so. Right. When it's a stream, you have to think about when you read the data from the domains themselves, how can I keep the data in motion without landing it into at rest in the database somewhere? Because once I do that, my real time capabilities has been lost. Right. And say if somebody in APAC, like a region in APAC needs my data and my use case is in the US, right? You're only competing with physics there, with light speed. So any latency you add by writing it to a database will take that real-time capability to those consumers out there. So how do we keep all that data as a stream? And what does it mean to read and understand what data looks like on a stream? Everybody likes to work. Everybody's used to using data as it was in the database, and that's kind of the paradigm we try to use on streaming, so that it's consumable to regular data people. But it is a bit harder to understand because things are moving. Things are a lot harder. Mm-hmm. And to make it simple is actually a hard task. And there's a lot of tools out there that actually make it easy. There's Flink, there's KSQL DB, and there's a lot of new vendors out there re-implementing streaming technologies in a more native, really fast ways. Really excited to see seeing the future of streaming technologies in the next 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. Tease a little bit more of it for us. So what to you is one of the bigger challenges in keeping things, doing this, but in an exclusively streamed way?
Well, I'll tell you this. The biggest chapter in this book is chapter 4 titled streaming data products. It's really big chapter because it's really hard to understand what a data product looks like on the stream and how to actually represent that or publish that data to somebody that may want to consume it, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll read you some of the sections out there. I call data like data derivatives. The foundation of like each little bits of pieces of data that you're, or events that you're capturing from the domains. You're going to transform those, you know, apply governance on those, and then you need tools to be able to join and then publish them into, say, a topic in some streaming platform. And then what happens after that? How do domains, even other domains, even know about your data product? How do they trust it, right? What's going to tell them enough information about the data product for them to trust it? I use the metaphor of like grocery shopping for produce, right?
Okay.
Right. So you go to a grocery store, and if you care about your body and you're really conscious about what you eat, you're going to look at, say, an apple. You're going to inspect it somehow. Does it have the right labels on it? Is it organic? Do I care about that? Right. Is it wrapped up to protect it from the elements? Right.
You're going to feel it. Some of that is not necessarily metadata that's been applied to it, but you're going to feel the apple.
Exactly.
There are properties inherent to it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Is it ripe enough? Is it even ready to eat? Right.
Yeah.
Do I feel safe enough to, you know, have my kids and my family eat it? Right. Do you really need to really portray the trust of your data in some way? And the next biggest chapter in this in the book is truly that really talks about the governance, like how to create a catalog. There's not there's not a streaming data catalog out there today that really knows how to publish streaming data products. And what I end up using is a Red Hat tool called API Curio, which is a registry, like it's got a schema registry in it, but it also takes a YAML file called async API. Async API is just an extension of Open API. So that's why I'm able to use API Curio as a way to publish data products. It has all the metadata in it that I need for customers to understand it. And then they know how to connect to it. And then API Curio acts as a temporary registry, even though, you know, there isn't really one today. Maybe there is. I just don't know about it.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, ultimately, if you want ubiquitous availability of these data products, you need a place to go look for them, or kind of discovery mechanism, which is going to be tied to governance, obviously, because
exactly
that's how these things work. Yeah. And when I first encountered data mesh, first wrapped my mind around it, this was, golly, I can't remember if it was 2020 or 2021. I should know that. You know, I'll check. But it was around then. A lot going on in life then. But I was thinking very much in Kafka terms. Right. And, you know, there's a sense in which, like, data mesh itself is a set of ideas. It's not something a vendor owns. It's not a product, you know, but then you got to build stuff. And I'm thinking, like, and just the way I wrap my mind around the new abstract concept is I want to make it concrete and think about how it might work. And I thought, yeah, okay, that makes all the sense in the world. These analytics products, I'm going to publish them to a Kafka topic. And then, you know, governance happens, like you're talking about the registry. Just in my role of trying to explain things and give people an idea how a new thing works, I always get to wave my hands about things like that. And people need to call me out over that more. But because that's really hard stuff, right? Yeah. And it's not a problem. But
anyway,
point being, I had a very Kafka-centric view of how this stuff might work. Not that you would need Kafka to make it data mesh. It's just that, you know, here you are, you're doing probably doing all this event streaming. Wouldn't you just publish those completed analytics products to a topic? And now from my rather more Pinot-centric standpoint, that sounds like a lot of work for the consumer, because now I have to put that somewhere I can query it, right? Like, that's a pain. Right. I mean, it's available, and which is better than it used to be. That's very kind of you, but now I've got to throw it in something that'll work. So now from a Pinot standpoint, and again, things can be data mesh and not have any of these technologies in them, but how do you make that application now?
The application of a real-time analytical...
Yeah. The real-time analytics and data mesh, is there a relationship there?
Absolutely. In fact, I always thought in the last year, this was kind of a simple topic. Yeah, I guess put a real-time OLAP database at the end of Kafka, and then that's your analytical database, your columnar database that you could use in your application for real-time, fast queries and high QPS. I think that's a bigger problem. No, I wouldn't say a problem. There are many solutions here, and I think Pinot really covers a good portion of that, because it's able to. It really comes down to the high QPS in my mind. You really need that to be able to provide a good experience to your users when you're using real time applications, and being able to source it from a Kafka, for instance, and then load data from a data warehouse. Is at the same time is really important. What I think with the data mesh, right? There's going to be many domains, and the way you use the data doesn't have to be in real time. It's just a mechanism by which you get your data product, right? And if you get that hose, it's like your tap or your faucet of your data, it's coming to you. You could put that in a data lake if that's where you would like your data. If you're doing machine learning, you could do your training on it. Just because it's streaming, the data is moving, the mesh is all streaming, does not mean that you're required to have real time use cases. Although it doesn't take it away. Right. It's perfect for enabling all domains with data and with the opportunity to go real time in the future. Right.
My guest today has been Hubert Dulé. Hubert, thanks for being a part of the Real Time Analytics Podcast.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for having me, Tim.
And there you have it. If you feel compelled to help us spread the word and grow the real time analytics community, you can give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are sold. If you're watching us on YouTube, hey, subscribe and, of course, hit that notification bell. And you can always share your favorite episodes on LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever it is you do social media. Thanks, and I look forward to talking to you in the next episode.